Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On today's show, we'll talk sports, and we do have quite a bit to talk about. College basketball's bracket-busting tournament is heading toward a climax. Will Florida triumph? Or how about Wisconsin, Connecticut, or Kentucky? Major League Baseball started this week. Will this be the year of the Mets? Probably not, and I must say that my producer, Jessica Blaustein, obviously wrote that into the script as a dig, and it's not appreciated. And supporters of Northwestern University athletes seeking to unionize are speaking before Congress this week, defending the historic decision by the National Labor Relations Board last week. Joining us today is director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and WAMC sports commentator Keith Strudler. So if you want to talk sports with us, give us a call right now, 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Now, you can also post your comments on today's show page. It's the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the phone number is 1-800-348-2551. Hello, Keith Strudler. Nice to have you back.
It is great to be here.
I take it it's safe to assume you did not win the billion-dollar bracket challenge.
No, I was so close.
Really?
I was so close until the very first game when Ohio State lost.
Yeah, you know, Jessica in the newsroom the next day said 99% of all brackets have been destroyed after the first round.
Warren Buffett doesn't make a lot of bad bets.
No.
So typically I would say if he's doing it, he's going to win.
But who knew Duke would go down in that fashion?
Well, clearly I didn't, because I had them in my Final Four.
Well, there you go. But now, of course, you are a supporter of the hated Florida team.
Well, now, why would they be hated?
Well, you know.
that seems...
I must say...
That's a leading.
Yes, indeed. That's what I do here at 1-800-348-2551. There was a certain amount of smack talk when Albany played Florida in the first round, or the round 1A,
yes,
if you
yes.
will. And you were certainly not kind to our Ian Pickus, who is an Albany alum. And, you know, for a while, Albany hung in there.
They hung in there. You know, we played with them. We gave them a chance to have their moment. But, you know, if you want to play with the big boys, you have to be ready.
Florida, you peg them as a team that has a very good chance of going to the championship. And yet, I've watched, I think, all of their games. They hang very close to teams that they should really pound.
Yeah, and now they've played many games from behind, which in some cases can be an advantage. Come late in the year. I mean, yes, at some point it might bite you because you, once you put yourself in a position to lose, you just might lose.
Yeah.
But they're not afraid to be behind. That's something you've seen with a lot of the teams that are far in the tournament. Wisconsin's the same way. It doesn't faze them when they fall far behind. I'm worried. Of course, I'm very confident. I'm already planning the victory celebration
over
my
UConn.
Yeah, we're going to do a little. Well, for the whole tournament, we're going to do a parade just in my cul-de-sac.
Nice.
We'll get the little wagon out with the kids.
And your neighbors are on board?
They'll be fine with it.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
We'll do ticker tape and the whole thing. But I do worry about the Kentucky team if they do meet up again. I don't know that anyone's ever beaten anyone four times in one season, and that's what it would take for them to.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. Now the Final Four is Florida meeting UConn, and that is Saturday night at 6, or a little after 6, 6:09 if you're scoring at home. And then the late game is Wisconsin against Kentucky, and that's 8:49. And then the finals a week from this past Monday, right?
Yeah, it'll be Monday night. Too late for me, but I'll find a way to stay up.
It's only 9 o'clock, Keith.
I get very tired. I turned into a very old man at a very young age.
Well, you'll have to stick around to Florida if Florida yes. beats UConn, and that's not a foregone conclusion. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. UConn, not sold that they have the goods to beat Florida. Wisconsin, I am not sold on Wisconsin, having seen them play U of A so close. And U of A, really not, since Ashley went down, not a prolific scoring team.
No, a lot of the teams that we've seen have had trouble scoring at times. Wisconsin might be, oddly enough, the team that you think of as the team that can never score has been the team that has had no trouble scoring. Wisconsin is a team that, I mean, at one point, several years ago, I think actually almost destroyed the game of basketball. They almost had to end it because they would win tournament games with 30-something points.
But they only racked up 64 against Arizona.
They did. They slowed it down, and I think they slowed it down on purpose because I think they knew if that game was played in the 80s or 90s, they were going to lose. And so they played it. They're and I hate to say this because I really don't like Wisconsin because I don't like the way they play, that slow run. But they are a very smart basketball team, and they have a great basketball coach.
Still, Florida, what one thing you can say about Florida is they seem to be, at times, at least in this tourney, a group of men among boys. And I think that shows up against UConn and probably against Kentucky.
You've got seniors on that team, and you don't have a lot of NBA talent. And Patrick Young, who's had a wonderful run, and Patrick Young is a guy to be admired, a very articulate, bright young man, who I think came in as a very heralded basketball player, and not that he hasn't had a good career, but he certainly hasn't had an all-star career. And he'll probably play in the pros, but not prolifically. He'll have a career on the pros. And Wilbekin, who's had his own issues there at Florida, has had he's kind of fearless and they have a shooter and they're a team. They are a team. It's actually really going to be an interesting Final Four just because you have a real contrast in the kinds of squads that are playing together.
Yeah. Different styles.
Yeah, and you've got a team that's put together that's this classic one and done, the John Calipari squad that tries to bring in all the superstars. You have a real team in Florida. You have a slow it down squad in Wisconsin that plays a very different kind of brand inside out. So I think it's all the people that defend the NCAA on one count or another, say they should do it this way, they should do it this way, they can all find their favorite this year.
Well, you mentioned the one and done, and I have a real problem with one and done just personally and philosophically. At this time of year, is it a strict advantage to have seniors or juniors, guys who are not one and done, who stuck around and are in the program?
It's certainly an advantage. I mean, Florida, I think, is showing that. If you have players, Wichita State was a team that could have, if they didn't run into a very good Kentucky team, could have been in the Final Four.
That was a great game.
And a game Wichita State very well could have won. Yep. and probably would have gone to the Final Four if they had won that game. It's a distinct advantage if you can keep quality senior players on your team. But what's also a distinct advantage is if you have five McDonald's All-Americans on your squad.
Absolutely.
You've finally seen this Kentucky squad learn to play together. And I think John Calipari has convinced his players, and I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine on the drive over here, that these players who were really high school kids when they got there are finally figuring out, hey, if we do this together just for a few games, we'll win a national title. And I think that's what I'm a little afraid of, if I'm as a Florida fan, that they may not have put it all together because they may have been thinking about the NBA, but all of a sudden now these guys are like, yeah, actually, we're better than they are. This isn't so hard.
So you're looking past UConn already.
Oh, that game, it doesn't exist.
Okay, well, that's Keith Strudler, by the way. 1-800-348-2 to all our listeners in Connecticut, that's Keith Strudler. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. So everybody's bracket busted. We have the Final Four. Who's in your national championship?
Well, my national championship is very different than it. My national championship was Florida, Arizona, and I also had Duke and Iowa State in my Final Four. And one of those teams was eliminated the first day, and that's a good way to start.
All right, well, let's start from scratch and just say that you had the Final Four. Who's going to the championship?
In
reality, not in your bracket, but in reality.
Who I think's going to be playing?
Yeah.
God, it's actually a really tough pick, but I actually think it's going to be Florida, Kentucky, because I think Florida can. UConn has a chance in this game because UConn plays this frenetic style of basketball. Kevin Ollie's got them buying into the system.
Yep.
A great story with Kevin Ollie, a guy who took over for, the guy who built the program. You don't want to be the guy to come in after that guy. And he did, and he's doing a very nice job. He also has a player that's on fire.
Absolutely.
That's UConn's, M.O. They find the hot guy and they run. But I think Florida's better than they are.
Now, do you buy into the fact that those games that Connecticut won were sort of on the home turf, and that was an advantage, being in the Garden?
I mean, look, a lot of teams play in their home turf in the tournament because if you're really good, you play in your region. Florida started out playing in Orlando. So, certainly, it's nice for them to be playing in their home turf. There were plenty of Michigan State fans in that arena as well. So you can make that whatever you want to make it. You still got to go out and play a game.
The nice things I saw, number one, UAlbany acquitted themselves very well against obviously an extremely tough team. They played very well. They hung in there. Dayton, I thought, was a real revelation as well, even though they've been to the Elite Eight once before.
Been to the Elite Eight, yeah, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while. And I'll tell you this. I was at the Barclays Center and watched Dayton lose to St. Joseph's in the Atlantic 10 tournament.
Yeah.
There was no indication that this team was going to be a team that was going to make a legitimate run at the Final Four.
Well, so you have Florida, Kentucky, and who wins it? Now, remember, you're biased.
You can't.
I want you to think with your head, not your heart.
I can't. I'm a lover, and so I'm going to have to go. I'm going with Florida.
Okay.
I think on one day, this team will beat this group of individuals. Now, okay. And that takes nothing away from John Calipari, right, who I think does a great job.
All right. Now, I'm going to say that UConn beats Florida in an upset, and there'll be a great wringing of hands in the Strudler household.
And my 6-year-old will really. Now you're disappointing him.
All right. Well, I apologize to young Strudler. Let's take a break here, and then we'll shift gears. We'll take some calls. We'll talk about unions and the NCAA. 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture. Since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York. A classroom in the wild helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts. AshokanCenter.org. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And Union Graduate College, offering an MBA in healthcare management, now online. The power of an MBA, the passion of healthcare. UnionGraduateCollege.edu.
Ah, lovely, beautiful music. It's Artie Shaw and his orchestra here on Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551. If you're on the line, hang in there for a minute or two. Keith Strudler is our guest, and wanted to touch on this story before we hit the phones. And this is from the New York Times yesterday. And it says, a primer on Northwestern players' quest to unionize. 2 months ago, a group called the College Athletes Players Association submitted a petition to the National Labor Relations Board in Chicago seeking to have Northwestern's football team recognized as a union. Now, if you're a listener to this program, you may remember that not too long ago, Keith was on a month or two ago, and we talked about this story before this ruling came down. Well, quoting again, last week that request was granted by Peter Orr, the regional NLRB director, ruled that the Northwestern scholarship football players should be considered employees, not students, and that those players had the right to organize. Orr's reasoning was based in part on the fact that players devote up to 50 hours a week to team activities and that coaches control their scholarships. Now, at this point, they're not talking about pay, but there's an awful lot of money in NCAA football. And is this the first death knell of the NCAA, Keith Strudler?
It's premature to say, because I think this is clearly going, by all accounts, to the Supreme Court.
There's many steps to go before that.
But even Mark Emmert has already thrown the gauntlet down and said, I expect, Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, has said, I expect this to go to the Supreme Court. So at the very least, they expect to go the distance. I think people should be wary of betting against people with a lot of money. And the NCAA, I've always
like the owner of the Colts, for instance.
Yeah, and I've always thought it's a little. I'd be leery of making that jump. What's really interesting to me on the decision, though, was the rationale for the decision. Everyone talks about the money, but it wasn't the money; it was the working conditions.
In fact, money. They're not talking about money here. However, I could see tax implications now. Scholarship players, then they're in a union considered employees, then that $50,000 a year or whatever they get, is that not taxable?
You know, that would be something for an attorney. but even the attorneys I've heard are unclear on how that will actually be mandated. That it sounds a little like a scare tactic. It's to some degree like watch what you wish for. But
right.
I don't know that anyone's given a real clear ruling on whether that's taxable or not.
It's a very specific ruling as I read this. In other words, state colleges could not be affected by this. This is a specific ruling pertaining to a program in a private university.
And other private universities can use this decision, but public universities are overseen by, you know, the unions and you know, state governments and all that. So they will be going through a far different system. So just because Northwestern has won this case does not mean that Ohio State has won this case. And it also means that students from that school. You know, it's like unions for faculty at the university. Just because one school has unionized does not mean that every school will inherently unionize. So there's probably also some differences in how schools will approach this based on the types of athletes that they recruit. I see basketball as being a long way from going down this road.
Why do you say that?
Because basketball, there's an enormous amount of self-sacrifice that's going to come with this process. And the guys at Northwestern...
Self-sacrifice on the part of the players?
On the part of the players.
Well, they already sacrificed. But
in terms of what they might lose, there's not that many Kurt Floods out there. And I think in a lot of cases, this process to unionize is going to be difficult. And I'm not sure they're going to get exactly what they want at the end of the day. I think basketball players look at what they're coming into very different than what football players are coming into. Basketball players very much do look at the NCAA as a means to getting to the NBA.
But not all.
Not all of them do, but I think that's what they look at it as. Right? And they say, and it's an individual glory sport. Football players come in and it's a battle. They have the concussion issues. They have trauma. They have far more taxing practice schedules because of the amount of tape, film. It's a different life, I think, that football players live than basketball players. I'm guessing that you have to be remarkably selfless, I think, to go through this process. And I don't, not to say that basketball players are selfish, but if I'm a star basketball player, I'm not going down this road. I'm going to the NBA.
But if I'm running a steelworkers union and I succeed in unionizing at Northwestern, I have dollar signs in my eyes when I look at NCAA basketball.
You do have dollar signs. What I don't know, to be honest, and I don't know, and I don't know that anyone knows, is what kind of financial settlement they will be able to leverage for the athletes. I mean, what are they actually going to be able to get? And I think that's literally the billion-dollar question. So yeah, they win this battle. What are they going to get? Are they going to get a stipend? Are they going to get salaries? I don't know that, and I also know the economics of college sports are not as kind as people suggest. Most teams don't make money, and that's going to be problem A, is that there are a lot of teams. What I think is more likely than this being, you know, the revolution, this is the precipitation of the breakup of the NCAA into new divisions.
Okay, and you know, you mentioned other sports, and this opens up this ruling, and again, it's a specific ruling in a specific case, and again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. We talked to Keith Strudler. This is a specific ruling, but how about the racquetball team at Northwestern? How about the golf team? What about Title IX? How does all this get addressed?
Now, from what I've heard, Title IX isn't inherently, just because you pay one group does not mean you have to pay another group. You can treat groups differently. You have to give them reasonable accommodations.
But not according to Title IX, right?
No, I think in Title IX, you have to be able to give them reasonable accommodations according to the nature of their sport. I don't think that a stipend for one sport... Look, the basketball team at the University of Florida is treated differently than the softball team at the University of Florida. I mean, they have different facilities. They have different travel budgets. They have different... Everything about them is different. So just because there is Title IX, I think in some cases Title IX has been used as kind of a red herring by the NCAA to say, oh, we can't do this, Title IX. Title IX becomes a convenient excuse for everybody when they need it. I don't know that that's going to be the determinant here. But I do think there are, just as you discussed, there are a lot of sports that clearly don't generate revenue but cost schools an enormous amount of money.
Right.
I don't know how this ruling, what I imagine is, as this ruling comes to fruition, they may be able to unionize, but if the cross country team at Idaho State, you know, they can go to the president of the university and they can negotiate, they're not going to get very far.
They're not bringing the money in.
No, and so the president could say, you know, we can give you this, or we can just cut the team.
Now, you know, I think it's the Steelworkers Union that's involved. I forget the gentleman's name. They're trying to get, you know, increased medical benefits and protections. Is it possible then that before this goes to the next appeal process, which is the full NLRB, that the college says, okay, well, we're going to institute a policy of much more medical support for our players. It doesn't interfere with any NCAA rules or anything like that.
Well, what I always thought was that this whole process could have been avoided if the NCAA hadn't been so stubborn in the first place. Right? If the NCAA years ago, we've been talking about this for years and years and potentially decades at this point. Everyone knew that this day was coming when at some point someone stood up and said, we're not going to take it anymore. And as they kept signing new contracts. I think some of these new sports networks have precipitated this because it becomes very readily apparent how much money is being made off the backs of players.
Yeah.
And so I think everyone knew this is coming. The NCAA just stuck to the rhetoric of they are amateur athletes, we are not going to do anything. If 5, 6, 7 years ago they said, you know, we're going to work with you guys, we're going to give you a stipend, we're going to provide medical coverage, we're going to make sure that you can come back after college and finish your degrees, I have a feeling we never would have gotten to this point.
But if they did that, then they create different classes of athletes in the collegiate system, and that's, you know, antithetical to what college sports are supposed to be about.
I mean, what they're supposed to. The problem with the NCAA is they're trying to maintain the myth of amateurism, and that's the inherent problem.
How much money is made on the NCAA basketball tournament?
Oh, it's in. I mean, the television contracts are in the billions.
Yeah.
So you're talking multiple billion dollars per year on the NCAA basketball tournament. It's the primary source of revenue for the NCAA.
The colleges get a cut.
Colleges get a cut. Larger colleges get more. The further you advance into the tournament, the much more money you get. But the NCAA men's basketball tournament is literally the means by which the NCAA is funded.
See, now I'm only projecting down the road here, but say this ruling is upheld. It goes to the full board. It ends up going to the appellate courts. It goes to the Supreme Court. It's upheld. I see the NCAA having to, and colleges in particular, having to reduce the number of sports that they
This has been something that's happened. It's been happening already. I mean, they've been reducing the number of sports largely because they can't afford to fund them. Right? They can't afford to fund them, or they're trying to create some equity in scholarships. And football in many places is self-sustaining, but if there's not extra money coming in off football, they're not going to continue to fund other sports. Here's the other problem that's going to happen, and this whole thing, this is going to be like layers of an onion. I don't know if you saw the story out of North Carolina about great inflation, fake courses or shells of courses that were created for basketball players. Well, just this week or last week, they were able to pull out one of the final essays from a basketball player.
Oh no, really?
Oh yeah.
So good work.
I say this both because I think my 6-year old, my first grader, is very advanced, but also it looked like something he would have brought home and said, "Oh, I wrote an essay on Rosa Parks," and it was an essay on Rosa Parks. It was a paragraph. It was apparently the only thing that was turned in for this class, and it received an A-. It couldn't have even come close to qualifying for a Wikipedia entry on this event.
Wow.
And that's what was happening. And this is, you know, and that's an A-. So now we don't know what kind of curve they were being graded on, but I think—
What college?
That was at UNC.
Okay, well, doesn't this speak to, and again, you know, Keith and I can talk here all day, but if you want to join in, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, then doesn't that tell you that money corrupts absolutely, and the entire system of big league college sports is sick?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, that you're going to find out really quickly that the institution is broken. And that's the problem here. And this is part of why I think the NCAA doesn't want to go through this process. Because, again, once you start to unpeel the layers here, you're going to find out a lot of things that you don't like to see. You're also, and this is going to present a lot of the athletes who, you know, right now are going to be portrayed for a little while as heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to say, look, they're standing up for themselves. Even though our opinion polls have that we've done with the Marist poll and HBO Real Sports have shown that for the most part, most people still don't want the athletes to unionize and they still don't want them to get paid.
Did you find out the reasons when you did the polling?
We don't get reasons. I mean, we can extrapolate reasons, but we don't get reasons. But consistently we find out that people do not want athletes to get paid and they don't want them to unionize. But the interesting sub-story on that, actually, is it changes when you look at it by race. So when you break it down into demos and you look at African Americans, the majority of African Americans think that they should be paid. The majority of whites and Latinos do not, overwhelmingly. It becomes a racial issue. And we actually asked a question of whether or not they thought that the fact that so many of the prominent Division I men's basketball and football players are African American affects why they don't get paid. The vast majority of African Americans said that's the case. So it is a complicated issue, as they like to say.
Indeed it is, and we will see as it unfolds. I'm personally amazed that the initial ruling was in favor of the players at Northwestern. Let's go to the phones. Ed in Albany. Ed, you're on.
Hello.
You've got to turn your radio down just a little bit, okay?
Okay, sure. I you know, have been looking at this, you know, issue for a number of years, and I've often felt and thought what we maybe ought to try is a system where we acknowledge they are full-time athletes and let them be full-time athletes. But for every year that they play for the school, they get a voucher. So if they play all 4 years for the school, they get 4 years worth of tuition free. And, you know, this way they can go and try to make their way in the NFL or the NBA or whatever it is. And then if they don't make it, they only end up playing, you know, the, you know, annual average 3 years in the league, they can come back, and then the school will provide for their education so that they're not left holding the bag at the end of the day.
I mean, that's an part of, you know, part of the idea I think that's being floated is the idea that at the very least, maybe they still are there to go to school while they're there, but that they should be allowed to finish their degrees. And I think that's one of the things that's been brought up in this case, that they should be able to come back and finish their degrees. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. The NCAA doesn't like that at all, because that actually harkens way back to the old days when they would just buy a bunch of guys, thugs off the street, you know, and Yale and Harvard would bring a bunch of guys off the street and put them in Yale uniforms, and they'd have them go out and beat each other up,
right,
and they'd make money for the university. It's not a new concept. It dates back hundreds of years or 100 years. But the one of the issues that's going to have to be resolved at some point is the fact that so many athletes that are coming in to play major college sports are in no way prepared to be college students. And this is, it's politically incorrect to say, obviously, but it's a reality. And this is part of the problem, is the system is so broken, so corrupt that...
But not everywhere. Notre Dame.
No, not Northwestern. Some very, very smart... But there are too many cases right now where schools are making too many sacrifices to chase championships. And I understand why. So it's an interesting idea, and it's one that potentially could work, but they do have to consider who they're bringing in to play these sports. And again, how much are they going to pay these guys? There's a lot of devil in the details.
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Keith Strudler is our guest. We go to Russ in Waterford. Russ.
Well, good morning. Afternoon, gentlemen. I'm sorry. You know, this just opens a myriad of problems as I see it. I can't even imagine paying somebody who comes in on a scholarship to play football. I understand what the other side of the coin, but how do you discern between a first-string player and a second-string player? How do you discern between a kid who comes in and doesn't need a scholarship, but he still makes the athletic team? Or what about a player that gets injured? I mean, I can just see, I can't even imagine how they would administer this.
Do you remember the scene in Moneyball where they were, I'm blanking on names, but it's Brad Pitt's character. He's out in the A's. And he's talking by, I only know people by the actors who play with Jonah Hill, who's playing he's playing the math guy. And Jonah's trying to convince him to go to Boston, to take the job in Boston, because they were going to offer him so much money. Billy Beane was like, you know, I don't need the money. And Jonah Hill said, you know, the money, it's not about the money. The money represents how much they care about you. And there's a little something here, because that idea, what if they don't need the money? And I get that. But you look, we figured out free market everywhere else in the world, you know? And look, my boss gets paid more than me. A lot of people get paid more than me, but that's my little work gripe here.
That's
today.
A different show. Yeah, fine.
This is HR today.
Okay.
Hopefully I have a job when I return. But
yes.
People get, you know, people do get paid in a stratosphere. I understand they'd have to create some layers of how they're going to do this, and it's not always going to be fair. But I feel like those are the smaller parts of the issue. You know, go ahead.
The other thing I have a problem with, and it's, I don't know that it's politically correct, but let's be honest. I mean, when they're scouting around or being scouted at a young age and they come to these schools, I really don't know. Like the last caller said, I don't know whether they're coming in there to get an actual degree or whether they're coming in there to hone their skills to make it to the NFL. I mean,
depends on the size of the school and the program, I would say.
And depends how talented. I mean, look, I think most college athletes, when they come to college, most think they're going on to play professional sports. And I say that because I've seen athletes at a much lower level who have no chance who still think they're going on to the pros. So I think most think they're going on to the pros. But that's, you know, most people also think when they take Chem 207, they're going to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And most aren't.
Right. And I always thought I was going to be an astronaut, and here I am doing a show.
There's still time.
Well, thanks a lot, Russ. 1-800-348-2551. I don't think there's any time for me to be an astronaut now, but... Jeez, it's kind of sad. John in Rock Tavern. John, you're up.
Hey, great topic. Thanks, guys, for having it.
Thank you.
First of all, I just wanted to mention that the NLRB ruling is a really only one step in the process, as you guys have talked about, and really it just, you know, it's probably going to be appealed, and it may very well not go through with the full board and so on. But in the end, it really just defines the college athletes as employees. I mean, the process of then going and unionizing and whether they go and seek different unions for different places and how to define their role and how much should they get paid and all those kinds of things would all be determined based upon the usual methods that happen. And lots of times, I think Ray mentioned earlier, you know, won't the college then turn around and start giving them health benefits or start giving? I think that you're absolutely right. Normally, the employer in a unionization activity will turn around and start giving away those benefits in hopes that when the election comes around that people will not vote for a union.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what the costs are associated with some of these things. I don't know which schools this would cause duress for. I think Ohio State could afford to do all of this and more, as can Florida and Texas. I also know that there's, you know, a handful of 20-some-odd schools that run in the profit on their athletics program without, you know, without subsidies from the student body. And so I don't know what the economics of this is necessarily, but I do agree this is just step one.
And also, if you look at what happened with the NFL and all of those former players who brought that huge suit, that changed at least some of the culture and the thinking in the front offices in the NFL. So ultimately, at least a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I do. And I think one of the things that does need to change is they do need to cut back on the hours these athletes are playing. That's going to be the toughest thing. This 40, 50-hour a week stuff is not, it's not sustainable. It's too much for college athletes. I think it also physically is too demanding.
But then quality goes down.
Quality
viewership
goes down.
Money goes down. That won't happen.
Quality does go down, but I wonder how much quality does go down. I mean, if everyone's practicing 25 hours a week, is it going to change that much?
Do injuries go up? Do careers end? There are many questions. Unfortunately, we're taking a break here. Zach, 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Back with Keith Strudler at the Lightning Round next.
Support for WAMP comes from Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting Johnny Clegg, South African singer, songwriter, dancer, anthropologist, and musical activist, featuring Western pop with African Zulu rhythms, this Saturday at 8 p.m., troymusichall.org. And Sylvan Learning Centers, providing personalized tutoring in math, reading, writing, study skills, SAT, and ACT prep, and more, sylvanlearning.com.
One 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We talk sports today with Keith Strudler, which we do every month or two. And I guess it was Olympics you were here last.
Yeah, it feels like before. A long time ago. I think it was the Olympics.
Yeah, just before the Olympics. And we talked about this issue with Northwestern, and it generated a lot of interest at that time. And here we are again. Let's go back to the phones. Mike in Cambridge. Mike.
Hey, gentlemen. So I'm trying to understand how paying college athletes is different than paying graduate students. When I was applying to graduate school, there were lots of programs out there that would give you a complete tuition waiver and, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 per year as a stipend. And so I'm wondering, I've never come across that for undergraduate students in academic scholarship and stipend included, but certainly for graduate students is very, very common. And so I guess my question is two-part. How is that different, number one? And number two, when they talk about paying these players, is that what they're talking about paying them, a stipend that's sort of a, you know, a living wage, or are they talking about paying them, you know, millions of dollars?
First of all, those are great questions. Second of all, the scope of this ruling doesn't really include pay.
No, this is just about their ability to negotiate, is what we're coming. But the graduate student question is very interesting and vital because the ruling was very specific on this. There have been cases, because in many cases, graduate students have wanted to unionize and have not been allowed to. I think the most famous is, I believe it was a Brown ruling at Brown University. It's either Brown or NYU, and I'm getting them confused. The difference in this labor board ruling was that, and the reason that they've sided with the players in this case, where they haven't always sided with graduate students and allowing them to unionize and negotiate collectively, is because they've made the court, or the labor board determined that what the athletes do is not actually integral to their college education. It's not. This is a separate entity. It really is a job. What the graduate students are doing, I mean, I was, I long ago got a PhD against the better wishes of my advisors. But what we did, what people in graduate schools did was actually kind of inherent to their degrees. You know, you were involved in research and teaching. This was part of your degree. That's not the case with football. But I do think, by the way, all the discussions about payment down the road are not for millions of dollars. I think, despite the fact that they've put a number on what Johnny Manziel was worth to Texas A&M, and it is in the tens of millions, but that's not what they're talking about. They are talking about a stipend.
Okay.
So paying these players is maybe less akin than to a graduate student stipend, and more akin to the student who's working in the library and getting $10 an hour.
I don't know. I think it probably depends on the university, but I imagine to start we're talking about scholarships plus, a few thousand dollars. But I think it's the medical insurance, it's all the fringe benefits at this point.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And then there's always the option of letting some of the real big players get endorsement deals.
Well, that's the, kind of the dressing here. And that's where the NCAA really just got in their own way. And this is the Ed O'Bannon case, who was suing for, the video games, using their number and likeness in video games. And the NCAA fought against this. It was, I can't remember which athlete it was, but numerous athletes have gone into their bookstores and noticed they're selling their jersey and they can't even afford to buy it. Well, that's something that's so easily solved. The Johnny Manziel signing football case. If they let these guys go out and make their own money off their likeness, you'd create a real free market, because the guys with value would be able to make money and the guys without value wouldn't.
Yep.
It would be very simple.
All right, here's an email. We'll get right back to the phone. Cheryl and Troy, you're next. Hang in there. Here's one from Scott, a regular correspondent, who says, it is my understanding that if football or basketball players pay big buck, I assume that's plural, that would come out of funding for other sports where the football or basketball programs are the cash cows of the athletic departments. I would like to see athletes get some pocket money along with their scholarships. My daughter and brother-in-law were poor student athletes. I assume that means they were not bad athletes, but they were actually poor.
I was a poor student athlete.
And Scott says, I disagree with paying big bucks to student athletes. And thank you, Scott, for weighing in. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Keith Strudler is our guest. On line two, it's Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl, you're up.
Hi. I wanted to tag on to the comments about how much time athletes spend. I mean, I agree that there have to be some changes in how athletes are treated. But I'm an alum of West Virginia University, and we were one of the schools that left the Big East. And for reasons I suppose that were, well, I know were monetary, they went to the Big 12.
Yep.
And this means huge amounts of travel for particularly the football and especially the basketball team. Neither team has been very successful in the last couple of years, and I think part of it is the amount of time that they have to spend traveling. But that's just another aspect of the time.
Well, I mean, West Virginia had to leave the Big East because the Big East was collapsing around them. And so I think they got out while the getting was good, and that was going to be their best, and in some cases maybe only option, because they weren't going to be grabbed by the Big Ten, maybe the ACC, but they weren't necessarily of the profile. And so that was the best option from them. There was a lot of money to be made off of it. In the end, the additional funds they'll make off being in a bigger conference with a bigger TV deal will more than pay for the travel costs. And I know they are big costs. It is a lot of stress on the student athletes. It's changing the dynamics. It's another reason that you might see schools paring down the number of athletes that they have. A lot of schools have far fewer sports than you would imagine that they have. The world is not the Ivy League, where they have 33 sports and 700 athletes.
Yeah.
The world is a lot more like Florida State, where they'll have 15 sports and far fewer athletes, but most of the athletes there will be pre-Olympic athletes.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheryl, thanks a lot. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. 2551. Keith Strudler is our guest. And Bennett in Newburgh, you're up.
Yes. What I'm about to say is probably not going to sit well with either of you.
Oh,
but
boy.
But just fair warning.
All right.
But you know, I'm a lifelong sports fan. I still, at the age of 65, play baseball. Love it. Coach it. Couldn't be more into sports. However, I'm not a big supporter of college sports. I think the intramural college sports, fine. But beyond that, it's not the purpose of college. And especially in light of what you're talking about with 40 hours a week of training or even 25, it seems just ludicrous. I mean, how can a kid possibly study? But that's not the main thing I call about that. My question has to do more with follow-up injuries, especially in football, where concussive injuries could show up years and years later. What kind of provision is there to take care of kids who might have lifelong debilitating injuries as a result of playing college sports, especially football?
Isn't that part of this whole thing with Northwestern?
I think that's part of this discussion, because it's not just the injuries that happen when they'll take care of you while you're there. It's what happens to you 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
And
right.
Look, this
that's
is the,
what I was worried about.
It's the same issue that the NFL's having. At least with the NFL, you'd hope that they made some money during their career. But, you know, if you give the rest of your life for 3 years of, you know, essentially free labor, it is difficult. In terms of the whether or not sports belong at a university altogether, there have been many who have suggested that it doesn't, that the kinds of athletics that we have, that sports should be removed from, you know, the other side of campus and returned to academic oversight and purview and turned into, as you suggest, club sports.
But couldn't it be said that the vast amounts of money that come in, let's say to U of A, University of Arizona, that comes in because of the basketball program also goes to research and other aspects that maybe wouldn't get enough money otherwise?
You know, there are very few schools that make enough money to send checks to the library and to the research.
Yeah.
It's a handful of schools, and you'd know them all kind of by name and by sight. So I don't think they're doing a lot. They do a lot for the marketing prestige of a university. I think, you know, the most popular word in sports today, in college sports, is brand. You know, the reason that Texas said they will not play Texas A&M in football anymore, because they want to expand their brand.
Oh, boy.
Well, that is what
everybody's got a focus group. Bennett, yeah. Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Yvonne in Rensselaer, you're on.
Hi. I know they started talking about, you know, the whole thing about paying players. Does that include the women's teams too?
Well, that is one of the $64,000 questions, not in this ruling, and we still don't know how that whole thing would shake out.
Yeah, because I thought we had a deal where we had you couldn't discriminate between women's sports and men's sports, or is that just on one certain level?
That's Title IX. I don't know how they would play that.
Well, so in Title IX, there are specific categories that are established for Title IX that they look at, you know, the facilities they play in, practice schedules, travel, et cetera. I mean, there are lists, but
many of these women's basketball teams they're as busy as the boys.
Yeah,
are.
And they're great too.
And there were great games last night. Actually, they no doubt that women, in particularly in sports like basketball, are putting in the same hours, same travel schedules, all that. There's nothing in Title IX that talks about how much an athlete gets paid, because it's never been an issue before. So, you know, I don't think that we don't have a real ruling on this yet. I do not think that if just because the football team is going to be able to negotiate a stipend, I don't think that means that they are going to, by definition, have to give a stipend to the women's team. I just don't see that as...
You can bet it will be litigated. This goes down that road and someday a college kid is paid to play, you can bet that that's first on the list.
You know, and the counter argument is going to be, then you need to start generating revenue. That's going to be the counter argument. And there's not a, you know, outside of two or three women's basketball programs, there's not a, you know, a women's program in the country that's generating real revenue. And so that's going to be the counter argument. It's, you know, there's going to be a lot of different definitions of the word fair used over the next several months. And these politics are going to make for some very strange bedfellows.
Again, and we don't even know if this will stand up to the first appeal, let alone the second, third, or fourth appeal.
Yeah, hey, well, it'd be nice, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yvonne, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. Keith Strudler is our guest. Kyle in Pine Bush. Kyle, you're up.
Hi, I just wanted to say that, you know, with all the different scandals that are coming out in college sports now, and a lot of them, you know, there's obviously the big one with Penn State and everything, but even smaller ones with athletes being paid and their eligibility, you know, not really following up on the academic side. Don't you think that maybe some monetary compensation might help to balance out some of these athletes that feel that they need to, you know, accept these gifts and do all these things to sort of hide their lack of academic standing, if, you know, if they were there to just play sports, or if they're there to just play school, or to just go to school, rather, would monetary compensation, you know, make this problem worse or make it better?
You know, it's actually a great question. I don't have a great answer because I don't think we know. In the end, there's always going to be some rich guy out there who's willing to pay an athlete more under the table.
Yeah.
So if we're going to, you know, if we think that some compensation is going to end corruption, you know, some kid's still going to get, you know, getting the wrong way with a bookie someday and try to point shave. And some kid's still going to meet a guy who owns a car dealership. That's going to happen no matter what.
Right.
But I do think you're right. It does potentially reduce some of the temptation because, you know, a kid who has no money is not going to be necessarily as easily tempted. This is why you can't bribe the pros. You don't hear about gambling scandals in the NBA. How much money are you going to give these guys?
Well, we heard about a ref.
You did a ref. They don't make that same money.
Plenty of those. Yeah. And also, what about the potential for student athletes to only be part-time, since they're basically full-time athletes? And I heard a previous caller talk about, you know, the stress of all the travel and all the time training. What if they were only part-time students?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. That's a great idea.
You know, then, yeah.
Well, and that's, look, this 12-credit-hour rule, which is what they have to do to be full-time students, it doesn't work. And I see it. And we have some great student athletes at Marist, but I see it with some of our students in season struggle more because they know they have, you know, they have a lot of travel, teams that are very labor-intensive, travel-intensive, baseball, softball. It's very tough on them. A lot of them say, I can only do 12 credits during my season. And I think and that's just at Marist, which we do not have major big-time Division I sports. We have a small Division I program.
But rigorous academic standards.
Rigorous academic, and so we expect them to go through this, and it is stressful on these students. I can only imagine what it's like at a major Division I FBS school. I think 6 credits I think they should be able to take a much lower number of credits and allow them to be athletes first and take some classes.
Kyle, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Erica in Albany. Hi, Erica. You only have about a minute and a half here.
Hi. I was just wanted to let you guys know, I was a Division III student athlete, and the number of student athletes out there that go to these huge schools, they're so small in comparison to the other athletes that we really have to remember there are a lot of people out there taking accountability for their academics as well as balancing. So we can't try to, you guys had mentioned, you know, removing athletics or switching it over to the academic side. You got to remember to have these kids take accountability for what they're doing because it can be done.
So Erica brings up a very good point, which is, when we talk about sports in this country, we're talking about men's basketball and football. And that's not – this is not a pejorative towards those sports, but that's the conversation because that's the money.
Where the money
is. That's where the television coverage is. And she is actually right that there are more Division III schools than there are Division I schools. And Division III has its own problems because they have this huge disparate types of institutions. But the vast majority of people who do sports in college – have no intention of playing professional sports.
Yeah. Well, Erica, thanks a lot for the call. And, of course, you know, the SUNY schools, these guys are unlikely to play professional sports, and they did extraordinarily well on the national stage. We also have Siena. And,
you know, Siena's a little bit of a rival, so, of Marist.
Ah.
They've had our number for quite some time.
Well, you know, it's great to
see. Men's basketball, not women's basketball, of course.
It's great to see regional athletes do well and prosper, and we thank everybody for calling in today, and we appreciate it. You can listen to the program online if that is your desire. Support comes from Buttermilk Falls Inn, Milton, taking reservations for dinners, spa days, and weekend escapes on a 75-acre Hudson Riverfront estate with lodging, a farm-to-table restaurant, and spa. ButtermilkFallsInn.com. H. House & Son, True Value Woodstock. Since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, Benjamin Moore paint and tool and equipment rentals. True Value. Start right, start here. HHoust.com. And The Linda, WAMC's performing arts studio, presenting a range of programming for the arts and community, thelinda.org. Thanks again to Keith Strudler. Really appreciate having him on the show. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Your phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Thanks to our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff on tomorrow's show. Fresh from his performance at the Linda a week or two ago, Bob Berman is back for another astronomy show. Stay tuned now for a news update.